ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we're reading from the 10th section, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavat, Bhagavat Puran, chapter 8, verses 18 and 19. Ya etasmin mahabhagaha. Yae tasmin mahabhagaha prakritim kurvanti manavaha narayo bivavantyetan vishnur pakshan ivashuraha yae tasmin mahabhagaha pritim kurvanti manavaha narayo bivavantyetan vishnur pakshan Avishuraha. Tasman Nandama Joyam Te Narayanam Samoganai Shriya Krityanupavena Kupayasva Samahitaha Tasman Man Tasman manda majoyam te narayana samogunai shriya kritya bhavaneva kupas yasva samahitaha.
We're doing verse 19 today, but it's also coupled with verse 18. So first I'm going to read the translation of verse 18, which is, demons, asuras, cannot harm the demigods, who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to Krishna is extremely fortunate. Because such persons are very much affectionate towards Krishna, they cannot be defeated by demons, like the associates of Kamsa, or by the internal enemies, the senses. And text 19 is the translation. In conclusion, therefore, O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayan. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayan. You should all raise this child very carefully and cautiously. So once again, demons, asuras cannot harm the demigods, who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to Krishna is extremely fortunate. Because such persons are very much affectionate towards Krishna, they cannot be defeated by demons like the associates or Kamsa, or by the internal enemies, the senses. In conclusion, therefore, O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayan. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayan. You should all raise this child very carefully and cautiously. The purport to text 19 is, in this verse, the word Narayana Samaha is significant. Narayan has no equals. He is Asumudraiva. No one is equal to him, and no one is greater than he is, as stated in Shastra. Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudrahadi Daivatahai Samat Venaiva Riksheta Sapasandi Bhavet Dhruvam. One who equates Narayan even with great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma is a pasandi, an agnostic. No one can equal Narayan. Nonetheless, Garga Muni used the word sama, meaning equal, because he wanted to treat Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had become Nanda Maharaj's son. Garga Muni wanted to impress upon the mind of Nanda Maharaj, your worshipful deity, Narayan, is so pleased with you that he has sent you a son almost equal to him in qualifications. Therefore, you may designate your son with a similar name, such as Mukunda or Madhusudan. But you must always remember that whenever you want to do something very good, there will be many hindrances. Therefore, you should raise and protect this child with great care. If you can protect this child very cautiously, as Narayan always protects you, your child will be good as Narayan. Garga Muni also indicated that although the child was exaltedly qualified like Narayan, he would enjoy more than Narayan as Rasa Vihari, the central enjoyer of the Rasa dance. As is stated in Brahma Samhita, Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sambhama Sevyamanam. He would be served by many gopis who would all be as good as the goddess of fortune. Krishna is not easily understood. Krishna is not easily understood. In the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Vijnana Yoga, verse 3 says, Manushunam Shahasrishu Kaschidyayati Siddhaye. The translation of this is, out of many, many thousands of men, one man may endeavor for perfection. And of many, many of these perfected men, hardly one will know me in truth. Krishna describes the situation like this. Out of thousands, some will become perfect. Out of all the perfect person, there's hardly one. It's very difficult to understand Krishna. In verse 19 of the same 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it says, Bahunam jnananante jnanavam mam prapadyante vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlabaha. It said, after many, many births, those who are wise, they surrender unto me the cause of all causes and the creator of all that is. But such great souls, they are very, very rare. They are sadurlabha. There's not many of them who actually surrender to Krishna and realize Krishna. So again, understanding Krishna is very rare. In the 25th verse of the same chapter, Vijnana Yoga of the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Naham Prakashaha. Krishna says, I am never manifest to foolish and unintelligent people. And verse 26 says, Bhavishyani Chabutani Maham Tu Veda Nakaschana. He said, I know all living entities, but me, no one knows. So, how can we know Krishna? The whole purpose of this Krishna conscious movement, the purpose of Vaishnavism, this great religion, Vaishnav, which hundreds of millions of people follow here in India, is to know Krishna and to be involved in a personal relationship with Krishna. So Krishna is described in this 7th chapter. It's very difficult to get to know him. So how can we know Krishna so that we can cultivate a loving relationship of bhakti with him? And that is the answer. The answer is in bhakti. By practicing bhakti, we can get to know Krishna and we can develop a relationship with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said, the bhakti process is to connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the definition of bhakti. A process by which we can connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because bhakti cultivates a special relationship in a spirit of loving relationship with Krishna. Bhakti develops a rasa, a relationship. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, verse 26 says, Savai Pumsam Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Atuksaje Ahaitiki Apritiyata Yayatma Supersediti. It says the Supreme Krishna is, it's explained that the supreme dharma for humanity is loving devotional service towards Lord Krishna. And it should be unmotivated and uninterrupted. That will satisfy the self. And the test is whether a person becoming joyful, whether becoming blissful, whether they're becoming fully satisfied. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verse 56, it is said, Matma prasad avapnopi sasvatam padam avyayam. That though engaged in all different types of activity, my devotees are always going to be under my protection and they will reach my eternal abode. And this is all done by the mercy of the Lord. In Baladev Vidyabhusana's purport to the same verse, Bhagavad Gita 18:56, he emphasizes that seva to Krishna, the loving relationship of seva to Krishna, is the goal. And any prescribed duties that one may have are merely incidental. So one will go about one's prescribed duties, one's obligations, in a manner which is not, we're not fully focused on, because our real focus is constantly developing a loving relationship of bhakti with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this mood of this loving relationship with of bhakti is repeated and reflected in Baladev Vidyabhusana's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Govinda Bhasya. It's a very nice story, which I won't completely tell here, but basically some people challenge the authenticity of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. The king was at a loss of what to do. He asked Vishnubhath Chakravarti to reply to the accusations. Vishnubhath Chakravarti deputed his disciple Baladev Vidyabhusana. And in course of time, the Govinda Bhasya was written, and this fully satisfied the king. This meeting with the king and the other pundits who were in opposition to Vishwanath Chakravarti and Baladev Vidyabhusana, this happened in a temple called Galta. This is 10 miles outside of Jaipur. There's a narrow crevice in part of the hill. There's hills surrounding Jaipur, and in part of this hill there's a narrow crevice with a series of temples, and they are there, I guess, because there's water. There's water comes out of the hills. And in the top temple, there's a tank. And the monkeys there, lots and lots of monkeys. And the monkeys climb up on a part of the temple and then they jump in. They bomb themselves into the water. And then again and again, you can watch them doing it 20 times, 30 times. They have so much fun going up in the building and jumping into the tank of water. So these monkeys, when I was there and thinking of Baladev Vidyabhusana and his Govinda Bhasya, these monkeys reminded me of the cat and the monkey phenomena which they have in the Ramanuj Sampradaya. Ramanuj Acharya, he propagated a system called Vistishta Dwait. He was very much opposed to Shankaracharya's monism, and he devised a system which he took all over India, and it was very, very successful. When Ramanuja went to Yamunacharya, his teacher, Yamunacharya indicated to him that Yamunacharya had left three things unfinished. One was incomplete. One was a commentary of Govinda Bhasya. He wanted Ramanuj to make a commentary of Govinda Bhasya. He wanted Ramanujacharya to be the heir of Valadev, of Vyasadev and Parasara. Parasara was a great pandit, older than, it was prior to Vyasadev, and he had met many, many books, including the Bhagavata Yantra Samhita and Parashara Samhita, and he was very, very erudite, very, very scholarly. So he wanted Vyasadev to be equally scholarly and to follow in their footsteps with prolific writing. The third thing he wanted was a commentary on Nam Alvar's works. So Nam Alvar was a great one of the Alvars, again very, very prolific. He had written many, many things. So these were the three things that he wanted him to do, and he did those. However, 400 years later, there was a disagreement within the Sampradaya. The people in the north, Vadakalai, which means north in the Tamil language, the people in the north, the devotees in the north, they were more inclined towards the commentary of the Vedas in the Sanskrit language, and there was an emphasis on the priests in the temple doing the agamas, the temples themselves, and that. So they were very much looking towards the Brahmins for their advice and guidance. However, the people in the south, they were more inclined towards the Alvars, the 12 different Alvars, and with all of the works in Tamil language. And in that, there was more of an understanding that God sees everyone equal and everyone's on the same level of God. So this dispute came to be known as the cat and the monkey. And basically, when a cat carries its young kitten, its young baby, the cat takes the kitten by the neck and carries it in the mouth. The little baby just moves around. Whereas the baby monkey, we see in Vrindavan so many monkeys, and even since they're just one day old, they have to cling to the mother, and the mother moves around and climbs and does so many things. Well, the baby's clinging. So this, they use this example to show the difference in their two different philosophical understandings. The cat is the mercy of the Lord. So the cat just gets moved around by the mercy of the Lord. The cat, just as the cat gets moved around by the mum, so the devotee only has to get the mercy of the Lord in order to get salvation. Whereas those in the monkey school, they say, no, you have to do some work. The little monkey has to make an effort. He has to cling on. And so this effort is likened to sadhana. So in the north, they were more into sadhana. In the south, they were more into just getting the mercy by following the teachers of the Alvars. So I use this to illustrate that even great devotees may have difference of opinion. Consequently, there are dozens of different Bhagavad Gitas. Dozens. So many people, they made a comment. One time, Srila Prabhupada was on his morning walk, and one devotee said to him, "Srila Prabhupada, what do you think you might translate next?" And Srila Prabhupada said, maybe Bhagavad Gita. So the devotees, they were silent, they looked at each other, they thought, is Prabhupada having a senior moment? Is he becoming a little forgetful? And one of them, quite bravely, said to Srila Prabhupada, "But Srila Prabhupada, you've already translated Bhagavad Gita." Prabhupada said, "There are so many translations of Bhagavad Gita. Ramanuja, Vedanta Desika, so many." He said, "One can translate so many different Bhagavad Gitas because they're each looking at the verses from a slightly different Vaishnav point of view." Just like in Los Angeles, in Prabhupada's room, in his library, there are the original Bengali commentaries of Bhagavatam that Prabhupada would travel with, which he would consult when he was doing his translations. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, his Guru Maharaj, he had authorized 12 different commentaries of Srimad Bhagavatam. So they had these commentaries and they had bound them together and they were in two volumes. Of course, not every verse was commented upon, and different acharyas felt only certain verses were important, just like we all have favorite verses in Bhagavad Gita, only certain verses. But there are 12 different commentaries on the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada is the 13th, that the Vaishnavas think that they are authorized. So Baladev Vijayabhusana, in his Gita commentary on this verse that we mentioned, 1856, he emphasized that bhakti was the goal and prescribed duties were merely incidental. In his commentary, in his Bhagavad Gita, in his commentary on this verse, in the purport, he refers to the Brahma Sutras, Vedanta Sutra, which he translated. So he refers to his purport of this verse. And his attitude, this was in Vedanta Sutra, section 3, chapter 4, verse 34. And so there the sutra, the Brahma Sutra is Sarvat Hapi Tatra Vobhava Lingat. And that's translated as a devotee saturated by divine love uninterruptedly renders bhakti totally unconcerned with any aspect of varnashram. So the idea is that one who is absorbed in the process of bhakti, he has no obligation to anyone. He has no obligation to his position within varnashram, his position within the ashrams, his position with varnas, his prescribed duty, his obligations. However, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami says that a devotee will all be mindful in his everyday dealings. So mostly devotees will go through the motion of the things which they are responsible for, the duties they have to perform, but in their heart of hearts, they're just focusing on rendering loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Baladev Vidyabhusana, he emphasizes this point by quoting, in the same purport, by quoting the Mundaka Upanishad 2.2.5, in which it says, we should avoid all topics and simply focus on God. And this is the bridge over the worldly ocean. And in this way we can become immortal. Bhagavad Gita 9.13 says, Mahatmanastu mam partha, that those who are not deluded, the great souls, protected by my divine nature, they will fully engage in devotion. Baladev, in this same purport of Vedanta Sutra, he continues his support of his argument by quoting verses from Srimad Bhagavatam and the Upanishads. And his expert commentary supporting on Vedanta supporters, supporting Jiva Goswami's opinions. One time I was on a train in India, and I travel on the cheap seats. I was there with ordinary people, and I was dressed like a devotee. I had my japa beads, I was chanting. So one man opposite me, he asked me a question, and I answered his question. He asked another question. I answered his question. And then I noticed that someone had sat beside me. There was a small space on the end of the bench, and a man had slid in. He looked about 60 years old. He had gray hair. He had a little beard. And so he was listening. So I saw him. I just ignored him. So the person, I answered his third question. So he was satisfied. So the man beside me, then he says, yes, but what if this? What if it's like this? So then I answered his question. He said, okay, and what about this? And then I answered again. And then he said, well, what about this? I said, my goodness, sir. I said, these are very astute questions. I said, you, sir, you're a philosopher. He said, actually, I'm a professor at Sanskrit of Delhi University. And he said, you, sir, are a follower of Jiva Goswami. So, according to how we... And this is what he wanted to determine. So he was asking very skillful questions to see exactly what was my beliefs, exactly what I thought, what is the Jiva, what is Bhagwan, what is according to Jiva Goswami, which we all follow. So Baladev Vidyabhusana, he did a very, very expert job of presenting Jiva Goswami's conclusions in his commentary of Govinda Bhasya. Srila Prabhupada, in the first Bhagavad Gita to be printed, and in every other Bhagavad Gita, the hundreds of millions of Bhagavad Gitas we have printed, Srila Prabhupada puts on the first page a dedication. He says to Govinda Bhasya, to Baladev Vidyabhusana, who very nicely commented in Govinda Bhasya, the philosophy of the Vaishnavas. So this is a dedication which is there. Dedicated to Baladev Vidyabhusana, who very nicely commented the commentary on Vedanta Sutra and Govinda Bhasya. So Srila Prabhupada, he acknowledged the expertise which Baladev Vidyabhusana had. So this sutra, 3.3.34, it refers to Atmarati, inborn intention, and it explains that that's very needed. Excuse me, Prabhupada, I don't know the time. Can you tell me what the... I can't see that. Eta, you tell me when I've got 10 minutes to go. Can you? Can you tell me when it's 10 to 9? Will you tell me, please, when it's 10 minutes to 9? Yeah. So that I can round up. So, they was talking about inborn intention, Atmarati. And this is, intention is very, very important. The whole of criminal law is based on intention. When you did a particular thing, what was your intention? In order to prove criminal intent, they use the Latin phrase, which is mens rea, which is the condition of the mind. In United States, they call it premeditated. It was a premeditated crime. You had thought about it. You intentionally did it. And in Old English, it was with malice aforethought. So in criminal law, there must be intention. Intention is very, very important. And the whole of spiritual life is based on intention. When you did a particular thing, when you're doing a particular thing, what is your intention? So Baladev Vidyabhusana said this particular shloka is about Atmarati, about the intention, and one must be very intent, one must be very focused to get the full result, which is pure love of Godhead. So one can go through the motions of devotion and not get the result if that is not our full focus and that is not our full intention. So we can get this intention, we can cultivate this intention by association. We can get resolve. We can have this intention by association with advanced devotees. And each devotee can help us. The whole purpose of devotees going here and there is to help ordinary people like us to focus on our devotion. This is the whole purpose. So, Mahadev, Lord Shiva, he taught Narad Muni. And Narad Muni went on to put the Narad Pancharatna, and there's five kinds of devotional knowledge, He also did the Narad Bhakti Sutras. Mahadev, he also inspired Panini. The story is, one of the stories, is that Panini was a young Brahmin boy. He was sent by his father to Gurukul to study Sanskrit. He found this very overwhelming and very difficult. There is about 4,000 different rules in Sanskrit, and he just couldn't seem to master so many things that he had to learn. And he just couldn't see that there was any system. There were just arbitrary rules that you had to learn. And he tried and he tried, but he couldn't do it. He was very ashamed. He thought, how can I go back to my house? You know, we're Brahmins. This is what I have to do. I don't know how to do this. I'm useless. He was actually thinking of just ending his own life. So he went up on this precipice and he was just thinking, should I jump? And he was praying to the family deity, which is Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva appeared to him, and Lord Shiva had his Damaru drum, and he indicated to him that he should listen. And Shiva did 14 separate different bursts, different tunes, different beats on his drum. And he was listening to those, and then he realized that Lord Shiva had grouped the Sanskrit language into 14 different categories. And then when he thought of these categories, he thought how easy it was that if something applied to one rule, to one syllable in that category, it applied to all the syllables. So then by doing this, he understood that he could group the grammar into various sections, and there'd be a limited number of sections which should encompass all the 4,000 different rules. So these sutras he called Maheshwar sutras because he had received them from Maheshwar. And then he, on the basis of this, he went on to compile Panini sutras. And the Panini sutras, this is the standard for learning Sanskrit all over the world, in India, and it gets translated into different languages, and people use these sutras, use Panini sutras in order to learn and to order to master Sanskrit. Now, in 1867, there was a Russian scientist. He was a chemist and he was an inventor. His name was Dmitri Mendeleev. And he was puzzling over how to group the elements that they were discovering and how to group these into a table. First he just had lists of them, and he was trying to see the relationship, and he was trying to understand how could he group these so that they could know more about their properties, so that they could make some inferences, do some calculations, how to group them just to make much more sense of the whole thing. So he had been puzzling over this. So he had one friend, It was also difficult because at that point he was only aware of 63 different elements. Now as time passed, people discovered that there's 94 different stable elements which are commonly found in the Earth's crust. And there's a total of 118 elements, but most of these are highly unstable and they break down and they become, they're just very, very unstable with very short half-lives. But there's 94 different stable elements, but he only had 63. So again, trying to do a jigsaw puzzle with one third of the pieces missing, it was hard to see a picture, it was hard to... So he had a friend who was a German Sanskrit scholar. And the German Sanskrit scholar was Otto van Botlinka. And he was a scholar, and he showed him Panini Sutras. He explained to Dmitri, his Russian scientist, chemist friend, who was an inventor, he explained to him how they had been grouped under specific categories and a rule which could be applied to one letter in that category with another letter in another category to form a sandhi, then all of the letters in each of the categories would combine similarly. So by having a group like this, it was very easy to understand whole areas of information rather than one by one, one by one. So when he showed him this, and when Dmitri understood how it had been done, this inspired him to draw up the periodic table which we have in use today. So today's periodic table is based on Panini Sutras, and so much, he did it all by atomic weight. So when he put the 63 elements in their atomic weights, he saw that there were some spaces in the table. So he hypothesized that there were elements which were missing. And he also, as they were discovering these elements and he was putting them in his table, he actually used a Sanskrit version in reference to and in deference to Panini. So he would have ekaha silica, ekaha boron, ekaha aluminium, ekaha. But in course of time, they dropped the eka, but it just became boron, silica, gold, silver, antimony, and so on and so on. But he grouped this, and he knew that there were things missing, and slowly, because people realized by the atomic weight, the next atomic weight up, they realized that there was something that should be there. And so then they began searching for these things and refining and distilling more carefully, and they were finding these elements. These were elements. An element is something which can't be broken down to anything smaller. It's the smallest unit is an element, an atom of an element. So he anticipated these, and this is the basis of modern science and modern chemistry, because by knowing how a molecule, an element in that group combined with another element in a different group to form a molecule, they could predict what would happen and predict the properties of different. So because they had this predictive power, because they had this greater understanding, then this really opened the whole realms of chemistry. So one can get results by doing something. There's a lot of amazing things that have been done. You just have to look at your phone, look at your computer, and just see what it can do, how many amazing things. So we can achieve amazing things if we apply ourselves to different aspects of the material energy, just as Dmitri did with his periodic table of the elements. But we won't get pure love of God. We won't get bhakti. Bhakti is only available if we apply ourselves with one-pointed as our main focus, our main objective, although we may be doing our duties, we may be obliged to do particular thing for our family, for our nation, for our community. We may have particular duties, but our main focus, if our main focus is bhakti, and we apply ourselves to bhakti, ahaitiki, apritiyata, unmotivated and uninterrupted, then we can achieve the supreme goal. Srila Prabhupada says on several occasions, if we simply chant Hare Krishna, if we observe the regular principles, he said, we will see Krishna face to face. And he says, this is guaranteed. So we're guaranteed to escape the wheel of samsara, to escape the cycle of birth and death, if we apply ourselves to the principles of bhakti, ahaitiki, apritiyata, uninterrupted and unmotivated. Unmotivated is very important. We cannot be in the community of devotees because we do a business, we sell them things, or because we get a salary for doing our work, or because the work that we're required to do is less than the work if we had some job to maintain ourselves. So there's so many ways in which our motivation may not be developing pure love of God. But if we can associate with great devotees, if we can take instructions for them, take example from them, there are so many throughout history, there are so many wonderful devotees who have written so many books on bhakti. Srila Prabhupada has translated so many of these books into the English language. Other ISKCON translators are translating so many books. So there's a wealth of information, a wealth of association by which we can apply ourselves to the process of bhakti. And if we apply ourselves unmotivatedly and uninterruptedly, then after this lifetime, we can return back home, back to Godhead, and Srila Prabhupada says this is guaranteed. In one place in South India, they are of the view that there are jivas who are eternally in the mode of ignorance, eternally in the mode of passion, and eternally in the mode of goodness, and only those jivas who are eternally in the mode of goodness will actually go back to the spiritual world. And those in the mode of passion, those in the mode of, Krishna says in one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, those in the mode of ignorance, I cast them again and again into the demoniac species. So one devotee was down there, he heard this, he came back here to Vrindavan, and he's saying, Prabhupada, that group down there said that people are eternally in the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. Is this so? And Prabhupada said, well, if it were so, what's the point of preaching? What's the point of preaching to people if they cannot get liberation anyhow? So all of the great Mahajans, all of the great devotees, all of the great acharyas, look at the life of Srila Prabhupada. He went to great pains to go to the Western world to take the message of Lord Chaitanya, to take the Sankirtan movement, to take the Bhashya of Baladev Vidyabhusana, of Jiva Goswami, and encourage people to start their devotional service. So a symptom of engaging seriously in devotional service is it's very joyful. One becomes very satisfied. One becomes satisfied with a very simple life, which Srila Prabhupada described as simple living and high thinking. Is it nine? Simple living and high thinking. So by applying ourselves to this simple living, high thinking, it is not an austerity, it is very, very joyful. And as we uncover our natural nature, our real spiritual personality, and as we develop a loving relationship, a rasa with Krishna, then there's nothing in this material world which compares with this. So the devotees appear to be living very simple. They're not concerned with fashion. They're not concerned with material possessions. They're just very, very sober, very, very thoughtful. But they're very, very blissful because they take to the process of devotional service. So in this section, Garga Muni, section of Bhagavatam we're reading today, Garga Muni, he's advising Nanda Maharaj. And he's very, very careful. He's giving him advice, but he's very, very careful because Nanda Maharaj, he's situated beyond cultivating an understanding of Brahman, cultivating an understanding of Paramatma, cultivating an understanding of Bhagawan. Ananda Maharaj is just completely absorbed in his concern for Krishna. He has just come from Mathura, where he was paying his taxes to Kamsa. Vasudev has warned him about the activities of Kamsa. Nandas comes back, he's in anxiety. He saw the body of Putana. He heard about Trinavarta. So the devotees, it is explained in the Bhakti Shastra that one of the highest moods, one of the highest bhavas is vipralamba, which means separation. And vipralamba, one is full of yearning in vipralamba. For again, when we will get sambhog, when again there will be union. So this time that Maharaj Nanda was away, this is a type of vipralamba, and he was in anxiety, and again he saw Krishna. So Gargamuni, he's very careful how he deals with him, and he's very, very, to not disturb him, to not, and this is how devotees, when they preach, they're like this. They take very much into consideration the situation of the person that they're delivering the information to. But nevertheless, the information is always the same, that we should surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that we should offer loving service unmotivatedly and uninterruptedly, and in this way we are guaranteed to perfect our life, to perfect our rasa, and to again be back in the spiritual life where we are engaged eternally in our loving service. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? Is there any question? Yes, sir? Could you speak a little louder, please? Hare Krishna. Prabhu, could you speak slowly, please? Yes, the whole of spiritual life is based on intention. Yes.
And on the basis of action, they try to judge or they try to understand.
Yes.
And many times they misunderstand.
Yes.
They go, so how to overcome my...
According to the vantage point of the viewer, one can form a particular opinion. That opinion may be correct, or that opinion may be incorrect. The viewer needs some knowledge of the subject, he needs some experience. Prabhupada said that good decisions are made from experience, and experience is gained from having made bad decisions. So a person may or may not get the correct impression depending on how much knowledge he has about the situation, how much understanding he has of what the devotee is doing. But the devotee's action should reflect his own intention. Not that his intention is saying one thing and his action is saying another thing. They say in English, your actions are speaking so loudly, I can't hear what you're saying. So by behaving properly, is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that one should have a devotional aptitude, but one should behave nicely also. And so one should be a responsible member of the community. Hare Krishna.